Greetings, everyone, and welcome back to the Mark Fraley Podcast. Today is Friday, the 4th of April, 2025. In Nashville, we are hopefully on the tail end of several days of strong storms, heavy rain, and flooding. We have not had this much rain since our 2010 event, so I hope everyone is safe out there. On the brighter side, the spring flowers are approaching full glory right now. I hope everyone has a chance to get out and enjoy them. Thanks, as always, to Ron Trammell for our bumper music. I have a little bit of a change of pace for you in today's podcast session. Generally, this podcast is about conservation, parks, recreation, native plants, and topics of that nature. But today we will turn to a topic related to the law and legal matters. I retired from the practice of law in 2017, and I don't miss it. But on a daily basis these days, we are all confronted with challenges to the rule of law and our constitutional order. For the most part, I resist the urge to use this podcast to voice my thoughts on political topics, and I express those views elsewhere. In 30 years of law practice, I devoted the vast majority of my time to assisting individuals with claims in the Social Security system. The Trump administration is currently making a frontal assault on that program, making a lot of assertions that are simply false, and proposing changes which I know will be harmful. The former commissioner of Social Security, Martin O'Malley, has said that these cuts and changes proposed would cripple the system that so many people rely upon. I feel a need to speak up and share a little insight that I have gained with my podcast friends. And so I've called upon my law colleague, Bill Benjamin, to chat with me about the threats to the Social Security system. Bill has recently been interviewed by various news media outlets on this same subject. As you will hear, Bill has the background of having worked within the Social Security system before beginning the practice of law. And so I hope you will enjoy our conversation, and we will get started after this brief message.
Hi, this is Heather Lose, Editor-in-Chief of the Tennessee Conservationist Magazine. Every year, we publish 6 beautiful issues packed full of timely and informative stories about Tennessee culture, people, and places. You can stay informed about your world and all the great things happening in your Tennessee state parks. It's easy to subscribe. Just go to our website at tnconservationist.org. Thank you.
William Benjamin, welcome back to the Mark Fraley Podcast.
Great to be back. Thank you, sir.
Bill, thank you for agreeing to come on and talk about this law topic. I should say at the outset, it's pretty unusual these days for me to have a podcast guest and talk about a subject involving the law. Most of my listeners are used to me talking about the parks and conservation issues and native plants and gardening and historic preservation and those sorts of topics. And I guess some don't know that I practiced law in Nashville for 30 years. And because of that, I now talk about parks and conservation for the most part.
And I don't blame you.
I was very glad to retire from that profession, although it was rewarding in many ways. Helped a lot of people and certainly made a nice living doing it. But at the outset, Bill, I want to let everybody know that you and I are old buddies. And more than that, when I retired, you sort of inherited what was left of my law practice at that time. I had been scaling it down for a year or two, so we're good buddies, and we frequently talk about these subjects. But Bill, you are a lawyer here in Nashville whose fo the focus of your practice is representing people before the Social Security Administration and also the Veterans Administration, I should say. And I thought it would be great to get with you since Social Security has been a pretty hot topic over the last couple months since President Trump has been installed, and to try to go through some of the narrative that's been out there on the internet and in the air elsewhere, and just to chat about some of these issues that have been raised. And get your take on it, and let's the two of us share with my listening audience our observations on the Social Security program. How does that sound?
That sounds great.
Bill, you're a graduate of the Nashville School of Law, as I am, and in fact, I think you were one of my pupils when I was teaching out there.
I was. You taught a elective class on the Social Security law, and I took it over a summer.
And I think in that at that time you were actually engaged as a claims representative for the state of Tennessee Disability Determination Section.
I was. A lot of people don't know, understand, or know, or have any knowledge that that even exists, unless you're really involved in this area of the law or this area of business, so to speak. But Social Security subcontracts each state to adjudicate disability claims or decide disability claims at the initial, they call it, and then the reconsideration level. And they do that with state employees of each respective state. And when I moved to Tennessee, somewhere around 25 years ago now, the job I got was with the Disability Determination Section, State of Tennessee. However, I was applying Social Security law from the federal government and deciding cases at the initial and reconsideration levels.
So you, before you began your law practice, actually had some hands-on experience with the inside of the Social Security system.
Yeah, very inside. And that
Right.
was the first, it was almost 5 years I worked there. And I probably handled, when you're working in the public sector, and I think this is another aspect people don't understand or know or realize, is I had close to, I must have had my hands on 1,500 to 2,000 cases during that 4 to 5 year period.
Right.
Between, they also give you an intense training on the Social Security program that lasts a year. I had a doctor or a psychiatrist in front of my class, which was about 33 people, teaching us body systems, also mental disorders for the first 3 months. And pretty much every day, I had
Right.
a professional in front of me teaching me the different aspects and how it applies to the Social Security law.
Right. Well, you know, the disability program as a part of the Social Security overall program, is a subject for another day in the determination of disability. Most people pay into the Social Security system through payroll deductions over the course of their working life. With the idea that when they retire, there'll be money there for them as a benefit to retire on. So that might, probably be the best focus of our talk today, and just the overall general Social Security program. The disability program, I should say, though, is there in case you get disabled before attaining retirement age. In any case, there's a lot there are a lot of allegations out there in the air politically about the Social Security system that perhaps we should talk about and just try to relay the facts as best we know them. The first one that we heard when the Department of Government Efficiency began looking at the Social Security program was that there were, hundreds of thousands of people over the age of 100 receiving benefits when it was clear that most of them were dead people. I knew that was false as soon as.
Sorry, Mark, your last statement didn't come through.
Okay, yeah, I was talking about the folks that were over 100 years old, and knowing that that was a false claim, that there were that many people over 100, perhaps even dead people receiving benefits. Can you talk about that?
Sure. I'd be glad to. And I think, the reason, probably one of the reasons you don't have many podcasts involving around Social Security law, even though you are quite an expert on it after practicing it for 30 years, is because it's one of those things where the general public just kind of, it happens. You turn 65, 66, you don't feel you can work anymore, it's time to retire. And it's something that you almost, I think for the general public, they almost take for granted it's going to be there. They paid into it their whole life, and it's something that will aid them through their retirement ages, which is what it was meant to do
Right.
back in 1936 when it was enacted by FDR to be a safety net for all them poor people that were left homeless after the Smoot-Hawley tariffs had been in effect for so long. Anyway. To get into the bones of it, with this allegation of all these aged out people, I guess the allegation is, because there's no way someone's alive at 200 years old
Right.
and checks are still going out. And I think you can confirm this with me as well. In my practice, as well as when I was working on the inside, there are constant checks and balances before a check leaves Social Security Administration. They are not just there to write a check for people and it go out the door. It might feel that way if someone legitimately paid in their whole life and they file for their retirement, they send in the proper information, and then the check starts the next month. It seems easy breezy, but the inside of it is, they have multiple computer systems that communicate with each other. They have multiple checks and balances with supervisors in different departments and quality review people to constantly pore over the cases, each individual case, before a check leaves the system to put someone on a paycheck regime or a retirement check regime. Same works the same way in disability matters. Someone applies for disability, it's the same thing. They've paid in their whole life, and the retirement check, I mean the disability check, is basically based off of as if you had retired at that point. You became disabled,
Right,
you
right.
had paid in, and on those cases which I adjudicated, if I was going to write an allowance for someone to get their check, that would go through a quality review through me first. Because a doctor's the one who would give the limitations. So I'd have to review it first. If it passed muster with me, my supervisor would look at it. As soon as they saw it was going to be an allowance, money's going to go out the door, check's going to be checked. And then the next step is going to be a review board for the state of Tennessee. Then the next step would be a regional review board for the federal government. And then it would go to your local field office, who would make sure that you are actually an individual living. Like just like with retirement, they make
Right.
sure that you're an actual real person and you're living. They make sure that you exist, and they process the case, and they have review processes there as well.
Right.
I've seen pretty much no ongoing fraud when I was working there for 5 years. I did report, and that's another major thing that's involved with this. First off, to say there's fraud where people are getting paychecks in their aged capacity that are dead and checks are being cut. The OIG, Office of Inspector General, did an audit. And the most recent one said there was a 0.006 percent of fraud and waste going
Wow.
to security. That's better than most private insurance companies.
Right,
It's better
right.
than all private insurance companies. And the other part of this is it almost it's a slap in the face. Like the DDS employees or the federal employees, they one of their jobs, one of the things they're reviewed on is to report fraud and waste and red flags
Right.
when they see it.
Right.
They're the ones on the front line who are going to be able to report that. And to downsize an already downsized workforce, which is another part of the DOGE program to eliminate positions in the name of eliminating fraud and waste, is just ridiculous.
Let's hold off on that topic because I want to get back to the staffing issues at Social Security and talk specifically about that. But let's talk about what happens when somebody dies who's been a recipient of Social Security benefits.
Well, when somebody dies, the first thing is I believe the coroner's office or whatever reports the death. Okay,
Right.
a Social Security number has to be put on a death certificate, and that death certificate Social Security number is then reported to the Social Security office. Quite often, you'll hear this quite often if you know anybody just in the right general population who had an elder person in their life pass away. My paralegal's one, after her father passed away, the Social Security sent them a letter about the Social Security benefits being cut off because of death before he was even buried.
Right.
It happened that fast.
Right. You cannot be buried in most, I think it's true in Tennessee, but I'm certain it's true in most states. You can't be buried without your body being handled by an undertaker. It's no, you're not no longer allowed to do a private burial without the assistance of an undertaker. And the undertakers are required by law to notify Social Security and the coroner's office, the health department in the state, whatever it might be, of the death. And then that information gets communicated to the Social Security Administration. Now, is there an occasional mistake? Of course, where a death happens, there's been proper notice, but maybe it wasn't keyed in properly to the system or whatever. There will be a mistake. It's a human process. But the system is set up to defeat those sorts of things. And it's a crime.
And there's also audits down the line
Right.
to make sure that this is not a continuing thing where
Right.
they go in and they check
Right.
about the cutting of checks and what's been going
Right.
on.
It is a crime to commit fraud against the Social Security Administration, and you and I have both been involved in cases involving investigation of fraud, and prosecution of fraud. And the Social Security Administration is not forgiving of fraud. They will take you to court in the fe in federal criminal court. And you will go to jail if you're purposefully defrauding the Social Security Administration.
What amazed me, Mark, working when I was working for Social Security, well, Disability Determination Section, State of Tennessee on Social Security claims, was there was many forms that had to be filled out, and this was for the disability process, but the same thing goes for the retirement process.
Right.
And what absolutely amazed me, and I had this discussion with the head of the policy department who I worked underneath, was how people refused to lie or even exaggerate the truth on those forms on a consistent basis. I mean, they were always accurate to a fault,
Right.
giving you more information than you needed. The average everyday person was very much committed to telling the federal government the truth because, for what you just said, Mark, they understood that it was because it says it all over the paperwork, you will be violating federal law if you lie to us. That's basically how those things are written. And people, a normal everyday person who's not involved with the legal system, who obeys the law, they're not looking to cheat the system, and they fill out these papers very faithfully. And from what I understood, the policy person ended up coming back to me. Her name was Ann Bennis, who's deceased now, but was a wonderful state worker, dedicated her life to it. She said there were many studies showing how it was almost to not it was a non-significant number of people lying and just being deceitful on the paperwork that they were submitting to Social Security,
You
which
know,
is
one of the places
wild.
where there's an opportunity for fraud I wouldn't say abuse, but fraud and is when you have an elderly person or a disabled person who is in the care of some sort of custodian or a guardian, and that guardian then somehow gets the notion that this is their money rather than the claimant's money, and I have seen several cases of guardians mishandling money, and I've seen several cases of those people going to jail, and or having to reimburse the Social Security system for those monies that were improperly spent.
I experienced the same thing, Mark. In my practice, and as well as when I work for Social Security, it is far more. You're going to see that happen a lot more than you're going to see the opposite of someone trying to forge documents or something crazy like that. It is usually involving what they call them is a representative payee,
That's right.
and I see that sometimes. I do some work down at the homeless shelter, representing some people down there, and I also offer some free legal clinics that I do down there. And that is one of the when I hear of a fraud thing going on, that's going to be the situation. And there are safeguards for that too. That's why we have the state legal system as well as Social Security. As soon as it's reported to Social Security, they'll stop using that representative payee right away. And if it's, God forbid, a conservator that's been appointed by a state court, obviously there's state laws to protect the conservatorship recipient.
And to qualify as a conservator, you've got to personally appear at the Social Security office with the paperwork that entitles you to be in that capacity, and they do a very strict training of those people about what they can do and what they can't do. And there's an annual report that a conservator's required to make
And
to the Social Security Administration.
Social Security has taken that very seriously. They really keep on that.
This and so let's talk now a little bit about the staffing at the Social Security office. I started representing claimants before the Social Security Administration during the Reagan administration. And so that's a long, long time ago. And in my recollection, the only improvements to the numbers of staff in the agency took place during the first 2 years of the Obama administration. Now there may have been some that I'm not aware of or don't know of, but for the most part, the Social Security Administration is staffed in a similar fashion to where they were staffed 25 or 30 years ago.
And Mark, an important part, important point to that. My recollection is the same. I don't go as far back as you, but from going back to about 2000, I think 2 or 3, when I started my journey, those Obama increases were directly due to the baby boomer population.
Correct.
because now you had this huge influx of population that had to be addressed. It was just a bump in the statistics
Right.
that had to be addressed, and it had to be addressed properly. The other thing they did was they instituted the electronic file. So in other words, they were trying to help out a little bit on the keeping track of the Social Security cases electronically instead of, and I know you remember this starting with the Reagan administration, we used to have to deal with these big files that were like this thick
Right.
on each individual case. Retirement files were also paper cases. And so they had these huge, everybody had a cubicle with huge chest of drawers, office cabinet drawers filled with these cases, and everything had to be physically checked on. And what happened was the new computer systems helped immensely with efficiency. They were able to go through cases much quicker, also not lose paper cases because now they're electronically stored. So now when someone applies for their retirement at, say, the office in Nashville, but they move to Texas, the access to that file is instantaneous. So
Right.
there's no bump in what's going on with that person being serviced properly or communicated with properly, with their as far as their retirement benefits go. Same thing with disability. But those were the last changes. And to give you a little inside look, when I was working for disability termination section, we had two computer screens on every desk. I had to have two computer screens. And when I started off, I believe I had two computer systems. One was this, if you remember the old computer systems with the black screen with the green letters. And then the other computer system was a more modern one. Then the state of Tennessee brought in another third computer system. And these three systems had to communicate in some way. So it required special knowledge to be able to do that because the federal government wasn't giving enough money to just give one integrated computer system for the whole country.
Right.
This was just like, it was like constantly putting band-aids on the organizational matters. And to that point, to help the Social Security Administration, instead of going through with a sledgehammer on these position cuts, staffing cuts, and how they do business, the first thing that would need to be addressed is give them the proper tools to get the job done, and then look at how you can streamline the system after that.
Right.
It just seems like it's being gone about the wrong way.
Well, the Social Security system was one of the very first agencies or entities in the world to make to take full advantage of mainframe computers. You know, back in the early days of computing, they because of the massive amount of information that they deal with, they utilize computers, and computers were well suited to to dealing with the tasks that they had. Just keeping track of people's payments and the contributions they made into the system, and the dates and times of claims being made, and all kinds of information that are stored in those computers. Well, when the Windows program was first introduced, Social Security was a little slow on the uptake in bringing bringing their systems into those new ways of handling information. And but over the years, they have done a pretty good job, actually, of creating, as you say, separate computer systems to deal with retirement claims being made, with disability claims being made and managed. But they still have, unfortunately, I guess it's true that they still have the old mainframe systems that are written in in the COBOL language. And Fortran and those sorts of old computer languages. Does that would be a massive undertaking to address. But Social Security has been required to adapt in order to actually function with the limited staff that they have. I don't see a place where they can reduce staff to any great degree and still function as an agency.
I'd have to agree with that. They like, for instance, right now, and that's one of the major cuts that I have a problem with, is one of the first things that the DOGE department did, for lack of a better way to describe it, is they put a hiring freeze at all the DDS locations throughout the country. And that's for specifically that's for disability and not retirement,
And
but
those are state agencies now
those are
that we're
state
talking about,
agencies, but they get funded by the federal government.
right.
So the feds shut them off so they cannot hire any more employees. Well, they were already grossly understaffed, barely keeping up. They were also allowed to do, under their state rules, but funded by the federal government, they were allowed to do overtime to keep up and get cases out timely, decisions out timely. And that has also ceased. And by the way, a lot of people wouldn't know this. I only know this because I was a state employee, and I did work overtime. You worked overtime, and when I was working there, you, if I re my recollection's correct, all I could get was comp time for overtime. And it
Right.
wasn't even at an hour for hour ratio.
Right.
So it was kind of a steal for the taxpayer, to
Right.
be honest.
Right.
Anyway, that got eliminated. So now you have a starved agency that's responsible for adjudicating claims at the initial and reconsideration level for disability purposes that is just going to keep growing and growing and growing in backlog through attrition because they're not allowed to fix anything. They're not allowed to bring in the employees needed. At the field office level, to address that, there's been a couple changes that are going to dramatically cause that to be a major bottleneck for retirement benefits as well as disability benefits. They've eliminated the ability to handle your retirement filing through telephone conversations and fax communication. You are now going to have to make an appointment and show up in person. And the non-complicated ones were being done that way. Also, there's rural individuals, especially in the state of Tennessee, where they don't really have access to computer internet facilities or they don't have the knowledge of how to deal with it. And those people are now going to have to travel to the nearest field office. Simultaneously, they're closing offices. So what you're going to have right now, a number is 12,000 people turn 65 every day this year, every single day. And they will be on the road to filing for their retirement benefits, most
Right,
of them.
right.
And now those field offices are going to have to deal with those people on a person-to-person, face-to-face way. They can't deal with them on the telephone. I tried. Now, they made an exception for disability people. At first, they were going to say only disability people have to go in person as well. They've now made an accommodation. Disability people can do it by phone. But I will tell you this. I tried to get a hold of the Social Security, our local Nashville office here, yesterday and the day before. I called four times. I was on hold an hour each time and got hung up on each single time.
Right.
And that was right at the beginning of this new institution, of this new policy.
Right.
I was never able to talk to anybody or get through to anything.
I should interject this, and you tell me if it's not true. When I was practicing, I maintained a phone directory of each of the local Social Security offices so that I could contact particular employees at the local office directly. Now, this is a privilege of being an attorney, to have that information available to you. They were not always happy that you had that information, but when you got a hold of them, they dealt with you in a courteous way. Because they understood that we were helping them, and we were in kind of as a adjunct staff to them, because we were filling out papers that they would otherwise have to fill out the, themselves. Is it true that you're are you still able to make those direct contacts to the local office?
That is a very much hit or miss situation now, Mark.
Okay.
When I call over there, if I have an individual extension, many times it goes to a voicemail now,
Right.
and it can go, well, since the new institution, that was April 1st, so we don't know yet. I've left some voicemails. I've not gotten any phone calls back.
Right.
That's been getting worse and worse since the beginning of this year. What I've had to resort to sometimes is faxing over a communication to the director of my individual office himself.
Right.
And even that hasn't gotten the response back as fast as it used to. That's
Right.
getting worse and worse too.
Right. And I would also have the individual email addresses of particular staff people, and we could communicate that way in an urgent situation.
Yeah, and the issue now is, because of the volume that they're going to have to handle, especially with the cutbacks of employees, these poor people are going to be buried at their desks, and they just can't, they're human, they can't do everything. It's almost like a designed obsolescence type thing. We're going to make it so you can't do your job. It's almost to that point. I mean, I made this comment before, and I stand by it. If someone came up to me and said, "How can you discredit? I want to discredit and immobilize the Social Security Administration and what they do. How do I go about it without getting approval from Congress?" I'd be going down this road that we're watching. I'd say, "This is how you would do it."
Yeah, just sort of hamstring them so that they're ineffective and
Yep, and do it in the guise of, I would never have thought of this, but do it in the guise of, "I'm trying to fix fraud and waste." And it's just, the fraud and waste just wasn't there. Are there improvements that can be made? Of course, there's always improvements that can be made in many things. But in dealing with their budget that they're given, which is not large considering the task that they are commanding, and given the tools that they're given to work with, like I talked about earlier, they're doing a phenomenal job. And I had a conversation with I can't divulge who the person was because they didn't give me permission to do that, but that person's very high up on the federal side, and that person's getting these emails from DOGE telling them to report what they did the previous week every single
Right,
week.
right.
And that person stated to me, not once have they been asked where the fraud or waste is.
Right.
As a matter of fact, this person went one step further and said, "I actually picked up the phone to report some fraud that I saw happening, and I was completely put brushed aside with it. We don't have time to deal with you right now. We're on bigger things."
Right.
And they were flabbergasted, and I'm flabbergasted. I can't believe this is happening this way, this fast. Well, Mark, you came quiet again.
Can you hear me now?
I can.
I don't know what's happening there.
Must be a
Let
connection.
let's talk about the 1-800 number.
Sure.
Is that still an effective way to communicate with Social Security?
It kind of, okay? It depends on what your issue is. If you're just trying to find out the status of your case or where your case is, whether it's the development of your retirement case or where your disability case is being decided, you got to wait in line on the phone. You're going to wait 40 minutes. They did. I don't know what's going on this week because I haven't tried that one yet this week, but it's a national number. So how they were having it work was you could leave your number and then they would call you back when it was your turn in line. So you might get a
Right.
phone call back 2 hours later. Okay, they were very backed up, but they were calling back and it was working. However, what the problem is they can tell you, "Well, we see in the computer your case is here or there," but they can't give you the specifics that the local field office can give you. So if you have a specific problem, like you sent in some paperwork, the paperwork might not have been scanned into a computer yet, or it might be being worked on physically before that happens. And the person with your case may have questions for you that need to be answered. That national number is not going to answer those questions or tell you what's going on with it. They're going to say, I just don't see anything in the computer. So that's the issue with that number.
Yeah, it was always my advice for the 1-800 was a good way to sign up for an appointment to see somebody at the local office personally.
Yeah, I do the same thing.
And that's about it.
Yeah.
I guess there's occasional exceptions to that. The Let me ask you this about signing up for the Social Security electronic file. Is that something you would recommend everyone do, or is that required for everyone to do now, or?
It's not required, but it's going down that road.
Okay.
I would, if you have the acumen, the ability to do it, if you have the computer access and you have the computer savviness to do it, I would definitely encourage people to do that. What it does right now is it'll give you a ballpark status of your case, so you know if your case is lost in the sauce or not, so to speak. You can access financials through that system. In other words, your report of earnings to Social Security that you've paid in over the years, you can access that part of it. And I've been sitting in is a exaggeration, but I've been watching the Social Security Administration has a weekly report that they're giving right now under the new under the acting commissioner right now, who's about to step down for a actual appointed commissioner. And he gives a meeting and they go through many different aspects of the different little battles that Social Security's fight waging to make things more efficient in the report of the performance. And one of the things they are pushing is this electronic access, because their dream is to have everybody go do everything through the computer, thus eliminating the need to have to go in person down to the Social Security office, or to make a phone call to the Social Security office, which is
Okay.
very understandable. I mean, that's the way many businesses are operating
Right.
or trying to operate. However, there are some things that just can't be answered on the computer,
Right.
regretfully.
So I guess if you are anticipating retiring, it'd be a good idea to the year or two before you're going to do that, create yourself a Social Security account. And if you go to SSA.gov, it's very clear instructions on how to do that, and they'll set up a password for you and all that kind of thing. And you can then check your contributions, what you've paid into the Social Security Administration. And then when you come time to retire, you won't have to create that account over again.
And another important thing, Mark, is, and I learned this from that broadcast that I watched on YouTube from March 28th, I think. They have a bridge program going on right now because they updated the computer system. So if you've already done that and signed up, you have to go in and do another action. I'm not an expert on this, and I don't know how to do it because I haven't done it myself. I haven't had to, but you can you have to you can to make life easier for yourself, rather than set up a new account, and I'm not sure of the date, but it's coming within the next week or two. If you go in and you do this bridge action, it'll take all your old information and transpose it into the new system that they're forming.
Into
So
your
you don't
new
have to
claim,
redo it
right? Into
again,
your new
okay?
claim,
But hence the name bridge. They're bridging you into their new
right.
electronic system.
Well, they're always trying to improvise new ways of streamlining, procedures, to their credit.
And those things have been going on for years.
Right.
I think this bridge system and this computer system, it's not something new with the new administration. This is something that was initiated years ago. And there's many other things that are going on right now. And that's another aspect to this fraud and waste allegation. I actually personally went through some of that list that the DOGE report cited, and it just smells of just politics, in that, for instance, they talked about a office closing in Nashville and how much money they saved the government for that. And it turned out when I looked it up, that office, I called around, find out, because I didn't see any local offices closing. And I've been in Nashville now for many, many years in this field of work. I'd know real quick if one was closing. And it turned out what it was a conference room in the building where they have a hearings office in Nashville. And that lease was up 2 years ago. And that lease was ended 2 years ago. And DOGE was reporting this as $178,000 savings to our taxpayers that they initiated. And it's just a plain lie or a misrepresentation at most.
Or misunderstanding, but being utilized to try to convey some other image or idea that was false, essentially false.
Exactly. Exactly.
Well, Bill, thank you so much for spending 50 minutes with me here today talking about the Social Security Administration. We could go on and on and on. I think for our listeners, it would be well advised to, especially if you're trying to file a disability claim, to seek counsel, because attorneys have ways of assisting with those things. Because they do them all the time, but have patience with people at Social Security, and also try to make your congressmen and senators aware of your concerns about the agency and about its survival.
And that and to say it again, you said this earlier, get going with your electronic filing if you plan on retiring. Because the other thing too is before your retirement date, you can preempt that stuff, and not only by getting your electronic file in order, but you can actually communicate the date you wish to retire to Social Security. I think it's 4 months prior to retiring, so that everything can be done and ready to go on the date that you do, in fact, retire.
Well,
Now,
Bill,
one
again.
other thing. Scratch that. My mind was going down a rabbit hole. I apologize.
All right. Well, Bill, thank you. Thanks again for agreeing to do this. I appreciate it very much. And
You're
we'll
welcome.
talk to you. You and I have lunch each Tuesday afternoon, so we'll see you next Tuesday, if not before.
Okay.
Thanks,
Thank you, sir.
Bill.
Yep. Bye.